and friends. Of course, I go by the name of the Kid, famous. You and I are tuned into the Tim and Friends Show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Welcome to Tim and Friends for this Thursday, April 22nd, live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We've got a busy show planned for you. 90 minutes on Sportsnet as we lead into a pretty big game. Pretty big between the Leafs and the Jets. And if you're looking for the full Monty, you've come to the right place. All 2 hours, almost always, on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Now. Arash Madani will join me in studio in just a few minutes, and we will both talk to Norm Powell and the man he was traded for, Gary Trent Jr. Same show, both dudes separately, but they will both be on this edition of Tim and Friends, so stick around. I'll explain how none of that happens without Gravis Vasquez and one of the greatest trades in Raptors history, dare I say NBA history. Listen, Norm has a lot of love for Toronto and Canada. The fans have a lot of love for him, but dare I say, GTJ may have set the record for the fewest games played to become a Raptors fan favorite. It should be fun to talk to both of those guys coming up here on Tim and Friends. We are also just 1 week out from what could be a historic NFL draft. Kyle Brandt of the NFL Network will join us in hour number two. Plus, Elliot Friedman will stop by for his weekly visit. Talk a little hockey, and that's where we begin today. As mentioned, big game tonight in Winnipeg, as the Leafs look to snap their five-game skid. However, a win for the Jets would put them just 2 points back of Toronto for first in the division. And keep in mind, they've got a game in hand. Now, the Leafs will get a boost. The debut of Nick Foligno, who has cleared quarantine and will be in the lineup on the top line with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner.
I might as well jump right in, right? Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, obviously. Just great players, you know, and it'd just be fun to just, you know, be out there with the team. You know, I'm not really too concerned about where I play right now or who I play with. I mean, I'm fortunate to play with any guy in that room, and that's how I, you know, play the game anyway. Wherever I'm asked to be, I'll do my best, and I'm looking forward to just having some fun with these guys, starting off with them, and hopefully we can get a big win tonight.
By the way, rocking the old school starter Toronto Maple Leafs hat, which he got from his dad. Not kidding. I asked him if he'd wear the Northland bucket on a little twirl around the ice. We'll see if he actually does that. But for now, the starter, not bad. Before the peg gets mad, not only does Blake Wheeler return to the lineup for the Jets, Jordy Ben draws in. Leafs and Jets across the country tonight on Sportsnet. We will talk about it with Elliot next hour. We'll also talk about the Habs, who got a much-needed 4-3 win over the Oilers last night. Now, a lot has been made about the toughness that Marc Bergevin has added in recent years. It was on display last night, led by Josh Anderson. Josh Anderson said before the game, we played it for you on yesterday's show, the Habs needed to start playing playoff hockey now. He set the tone in warmups, delivering a message to Alex Chiasson after it was Chiasson's hit on Carey Price Tuesday that left the Habs goalie sidelined with a concussion. And the team backed him up, dominating the first period, outshooting Edmonton 14-3. They had 21 hits in that first period. And after Corey Perry fought Chiasson, Anderson scored twice and said after the game, the Habs wanted to make a statement.
You know, I thought we all did a good job of that, just, you know, letting them know that, you know, we're coming out after, you know, they, you know, hurt our best goalie and the best goalie in the league. So you can't do that to our top players, and they're going to pay for it, and they did.
With a win, too. Montreal's win, a blow to Vancouver's slim playoff chances. The Canucks now 10 points back with 5 games in hand. But don't ask Travis Green. Hey, Travis, you think you can still make a run at the postseason?
Do you see the playoffs as a realistic possibility for your group?
Yeah. Why not?
Wonderful question. Why not? Tonight, the Canucks begin the first of 4 straight against the Sens. Now, consider this. Vancouver's 5-0 against Ottawa this season. They'll look to become the second team this season, joining the Oilers to complete the 9-game sweep over the Sens. Sens have played tough. Viewers in the Vancouver region can see the game tonight, Sportsnet Pacific, 7 local time. That's 10 Eastern. It's an off day for the Blue Jays after they got what felt like a big win in Boston last night. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. continued his blistering pace to start the season. 2-for-3 on the night with a run, an RBI, and 2 walks. He's the only player in the majors to reach base safely in each of his team's games this season. He's batting .383. That average? Third best in the American League. He leads the league in on-base percentage, is third in OPS and hits, and most surprisingly, third in base-running wins above replacement. Slim down, Vladdy Jr. Blue Jay Central producer Chris Black pointed out on Twitter that Vladdy's .513 on-base percentage in March and April sits third highest in Jays history, behind Jose Bautista in 2011 and John Olerud in 1993, and ahead of Carlos Delgado in 2003. Chris wrote, if you want to get excited for the rest of the season, check out Bautista's 2011 and Olerud's 1993 and Delgado's 2003 numbers. Okay, Chris, we did. Look at these. Pretty crazy numbers for the entire year. Vladdy's hot start, probably part of the reason why Jason Stark of The Athletic wrote about the Jays. Look past the April standings. Look past those games in Dunedin. They've built a foundation to create an international baseball force. The bandwagon seems to be rolling, despite their record. Are you on it? What about you, Raptor fans? Bandwagon?
First things first.
Okay. It may feel like we are beating the dead horse, or more PETA-friendly, feeding the fed horse. But flip-flops on the Raptors' flip-flop feels a little like Kyle, I screwed that up. I was trying to be all cute, and I was going to make a Kyle Schufelt reference because he's a gymnast, and I screwed up the flip-flop and the flip-flops. I should just go Rosie McLennan on this. Back, forth, flip-flop. Where's Vladdy Divac taking the charge? You know what I'm saying? After about a month of reckoning on Raptors Twitter, it felt like the tide turned during last night's Nets game. That's right. The Raptors' tank job has fallen apart faster than my line on Kyle Schufelt or the European Super League. Last night, the Raptors had their full lineup intact for the first time in almost a month. Lowry, Siakam, Van Vliet, Ananobi back from getting a break due to injuries, rest, and, oh yeah, that COVID-19 thing. So the team was forced into having to pay a $25,000 fine for the right to rest. And imagine this, Adam Silver. The Raptors looked, well, rested. They looked refreshed. They looked energized. They looked like the Raptors and kicked Brooklyn's ass. Yeah, I know there's no James Harden or Kevin Durant. And yes, the Chris Boucher injury is concerning. Hopefully not too serious. We are hearing we'll hear more tomorrow. But lo and behold, the Raptors have now won 4 straight and are a half a game back of the Red Hot Wizards for the final play-in spot in the East. And moreover, they look like a team that nobody wants to play in either a winner-go-home scenario or even a best-of-7 series. Yesterday, we talked about why rooting for the Raptors' tank was an exercise in futility. And last night, they showed you why, one, because this team never gives up and is never going to give up. And two, watching that last night is a hell of a lot more fun than watching Henry Ellenson. No disrespect, Hank. Listen, I think some of you default to the position of least disappointment. It's like you'd rather cheer for the tank than get emotionally invested in the core of a group that gave you a world championship. Shame on you. Shame on you. This can be fun. Let them win a round. Let them show flashes of what they were and what they might be. I get it, I do. Many thought that the resting of the Raptors regulars was just a signal from the front office that they were throwing in the towel. But maybe they just knew that the players needed, well, rest. I mean, after having to deal with one of the most absurd seasons any NBA team has ever been subjected to, moving to Tampa, living in a hotel under tight restrictions, rumors of the greatest player in franchise history being traded, and then having the second longest tenured player actually being dealt. He's joining us in mere moments. His name's Norm Powell. Being forced to play games with eight players available, some just called up from the G League, not to mention players getting sick with the deadly virus, then trying to return while dealing with the after effects of said deadly virus, all while playing a condensed schedule and then getting fined for resting players. Hell, they even had a rain delay in a game at Madison Square Gardens. Just when you thought it was okay to break them, they showed last night they still got a little fight left in them. The whole Rudy Tomjanovich, never underestimate the heart of a champion thing. I don't know. Maybe. On top of that, they now have a serviceable center in Kem Birch, and the depth issues that plagued the team early on seemingly gone. I mean, you can't tell me that this team wouldn't strike fear into the heart of any team that had to face them in the postseason. I'm not saying they would beat the Nets or the Sixers or the Bucks, and I get that it's highly unlikely they've even get a chance to play a team like Milwaukee, but just play along. Let's just say the Bucks finish first, Raptors get through the play-in tournament as the 8 seed. Wouldn't you like to watch that? Wouldn't you like to see Nick Nurse versus Mike Budenholzer again? Like, what if the Raptors happen to knock out the Bucks in that first round? You think Giannis wants to stay if they did do that? Listen, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I don't know what happened to my computer here. It went off. Did you hear it? It's kind of possessed. Arash has been sitting here the entire time. Listen. Watching lottery balls and praying to get to six is fun, but so would facing the Bucks in a trade your superstar cage match. Again, I'm not saying, I'm just saying, and apparently so is my computer. Introduce Ryan O'Reilly.
First things first.
I have no idea what just happened with my computer. Kenny Reed was so good. We have another full friend of the show, Arash Madani, who's been sitting here the whole time. Arash, I know you were.
What was that? What video is up on? I'm glad that's a corporate computer, because it was your personal computer. I wouldn't want to know what audio or video you'd have popping.
It was a YouTube video that had kept rolling from the original YouTube video that I watched of the All-Star game in 2020, where in a stunning, the Blues had their heart and soul announce the starting lineups.
We watch different things on YouTube. Tim, you and me, we have different YouTube.
It started with a link from somewhere else, okay. But I do apologize to everyone.
And that's no disrespect to Layla or to Alex Petrangelo.
No, not in any way, shape, or form. But when I first heard Layla Anderson's voice while I was talking about the Raptors, it scared the bleep out of me. I don't know if you could tell.
Brooklyn's not afraid of the Raptors.
I don't think Brooklyn's afraid of the Raptors either.
I don't think Philly's afraid of the Raptors. Yeah. It's a good narrative, though. Yeah. Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
No, I don't know that Philly's not afraid of the Raptors.
Come on. They've won 4 in a row.
Who? Philadelphia.
No, the Raptors. 5 in a row.
What have they done against Philadelphia this year? I know they beat them once. I'll look it up.
We now have base running wins above replacement. Is this now a BR war?
Let me just ask you this.
Yeah.
Would the Philadelphia 76ers rather play the Washington Wizards or the Toronto Raptors?
Well, I think anybody would rather play the Washington Wizards.
That's all I'm saying here, is that they probably
get... So you're not the bottom of the barrel?
No, that they probably get a series out of the Raptors when normally 1 versus 8 in the NBA is a walkthrough. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. But the end is inevitable.
The end is they're not winning anything this year.
You might get a win, you might get a game, and then you keep one or two close, and the Sixers win in 5.
All right.
Yeah.
Someone look up the Raptors. Jesse, Raptors versus Sixers this year.
Sixers have won twice. Raptors have won once.
All right.
But base running wins above replacement. Yeah,
I don't know what that one was. I don't know.
I'm showing
that he slimmed down. Vladdy slimmed down.
And look, I understand it.
You wrote
stats.
Down like 10 things on that sheet of paper. Yeah. What else you got?
But that's number one on my list. BR war. Like AVG, I understand. OPS, I'm all for. ERA, yes. BRWAR, that's where I draw the line.
Might have been baseball reference war.
But they were talking about base running, weren't they?
I digress. It might have been. Are you sticking around for the whole show?
I am.
By the way, I want to go to the... We're going to have Gary Trent and Norm Powell on the show.
Right.
I want to go to the trade tree that got... Steve Dangle teased this... Not now. A little later on, I want to show you the trade tree because it's unbelievable what the Raptors got for 23 games of Gravis Vasquez. Just getting started here on Tim and Friends. And what a guest lineup we have. Up next, the Raptors' Gary Trent Jr. will join us, followed by the man he was traded for, Norm Powell from Portland. Later on, Elliot Friedman ahead of the Leafs and Jets. Kyle Brandt for some NFL draft talk. Stack Show, please. Stay with us. It's Tim and Friends.
2 seconds. Trent. Adjustment.
Pitch. Coming right back at us.
Yeah! Hacks! With a bare hand snag.
Finally have an opportunity to showcase everything I can do. Coaches believe in me. It's a great thing. It's a great feeling.
Trent, bucket and bucket. Are you kidding me? Gary Trent Jr. is lights out.
He doesn't need a whole lot of encouragement.
Give him the ball and get out of the way.
Sit back and enjoy the Gary Trent Jr. show.
2 seconds. Trent drills it for the win. Gary Trent Jr. delivers the W for the Raptors at the buzzer.
He fits right in. He's a cool person. He's funny and he likes basketball.
Typical OG. He's not only among the newest Raptors, he's among the newest Raptors fan favorites, endearing himself to the North Dem with 31 in his fourth game as a Raptor, 44 in his ninth game as a Raptor, and oh yeah, he was a plus 54 versus the Warriors, second best number in the history of the game. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Tim and Friends crew, Gary Trent Jr. Gary, thanks for doing this.
I appreciate y'all having me. Thank you so much.
Do you feel as comfortable as it looks like you feel with your new team?
You can say that. You know, when I first got here, everybody did an amazing job of making it, you know, to transition as normal as possible, rather giving me advice, showing me, you know, play, showing me sets. So, you know, like I said, when I first got here, just trying to learn as much as I can, absorb as much as I can, and, you know, grow and be a part and come together as much as I can with the team and the guys and the organization and the city and everything. So, you know, that's my goal.
And you seem to have the gear too, Gary. Like, does Drake just send you a box of OVO stuff? Did the Blue Jays send you a personalized jersey, or are you just spending your time and your money ordering some of that up?
I already had the OVO shirt for a while now, and then I can't lie, the Blue Jays showed some love, and you know, by the honor of giving me one of their jerseys, I appreciate it. So shout out to the Blue Jays, much love.
And what about the silk drip on the sidelines? Like that got some love.
that was just in the closet, you know.
let us know when the next viral look is coming out, because you've already made an impact with your clothing already.
No, that's never the goal. Just all clean.
All right, let's talk about the impact that you've made on the court. Listen, I don't know the last time. I mean, I know because a stat guy told me Klay Thompson did something similar, but 44 on 19 shots, like. Have you ever done, like, Duke, prolific prep, Apple Valley? Have you ever done 44 on 19 before?
Man, I don't think I have. You know, like I said, like I always say, you know, I was just given opportunity. A coach put me in positions, teammates found me. And, you know, I just got hot, kept going, guys kept feeding me. You know, so it was just one of those nights.
Gary, was it too crowded a backcourt in Portland, or were you not being used properly in Portland?
I wouldn't really say either. You know, players that are there, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Carmelo Anthony, you know, all those guys are Hall of Fame guys, you know. So the whole time I was there, I was trying to learn as much as I could from them, be a sponge. You know, I asked them everything, you know, questions to the craziest thing, to on court, to off court, to how do you handle this situation with your family, you know, everything, you know. Those are my vets, you know, they've been in a position, they've been in the league for a while now. So really, just being there, I was trying to learn as much as I could. You know, I wouldn't say that it was overcrowded or it wasn't, you know, just wasn't able to, you know, showcase what I could do, you know.
Sure. Was
my time. Still learning.
What are a couple of pieces of advice that you carry with you, that one or two of those guys may have shared with you?
I won't even say it was just, you know, the advice that they said to me, like, you know, young fella, come here and talk to me. I wouldn't even say that. I would say it's, you know, through their actions. You know, like I said, I watched them. You know, I watched them go 100% every shoot around. You know, I see them locked in every practice. You know, I see on the plane, they're watching film. They're getting better. They're talking. They're discussing the game. You know, there's a lot of things, little things that they do, you know, to separate themselves from, you know, their peers in the competition. And I took away as much as I could.
When you're drafted in the second round, and I know like one and done is evolving these days, but when you're drafted in the second round, it kind of forces you to grind immediately. But that slow build, like we're going to talk about NFL quarterbacks a little bit later on in the show, and some of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game sat and watched for a little while. Like Patty Mahomes didn't start immediately. He came in after Alex Smith and had kind of watched other guys go about it. I know as a competitor, you probably wanted to jump right into the deep end. But having sat and watched Dame and CJ work, do you think like you kind of accrued a little bit of knowledge that you might not have got if you had been drafted in a different spot?
You could say that for sure. Like the things I learned, you know, are not comparable at all. You know, coming into the second round, obviously, within myself, I thought I should be a little higher. So I already came in, you know, with a certain chip on my shoulder, already having a chip. And, you know, they just, man, really helped me, you know. They treated me like I was just, you know, a regular draft pick. Dame texted me, even being drafted in the second round. You know, I don't know how many guys are texting second round picks if they're the head of the organization. You know, it's just who they are as people. You know, so like you said, I took everything from them as I could.
Gary, there's a lot of talk about what the future of college basketball is going to be. We've already seen the one and dones, seen guys say, you know what, we're not going to do this. We're going to go to the G League, the transfer portal, what's happening with it now. What's your stance on what college basketball is? Is there a value in it for a player who's headed to the league? And if I were to say, Gary, make a couple of recommendations on how to make NCAA ball better, what would you do?
Well, first, it's different, you know, the type of player, who they are. You know, there's different options that they could go to. For example, if you're talking to a kid that potentially has, you know, generational talent or, you know, has a great chance of being a one and done, there's a lot of things that you can offer with the G Night League, you know. So I think it's like where they have young guys, you know, that has the potential to be, they can go there. You have that option. You can go to college. You know, college can help, you know, a little bit. In a sense, you know, obviously there's different alternatives you can go to. You can go overseas as well, too. So to be honest with you, to answer your question, who is this player and what kind of player are we talking about?
Right, right. So if you're – okay, so you're a Minnesota guy.
Yeah.
The next Jalen Suggs, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, he calls you up and says, Gary, I know I can be a top five, top ten pick. What do you think I should do coming out of high school? What would be some of your advice for him?
Well, first of all, I'll tell him whatever's best for you and your family. You know, at the end of the day, if you want to take that chance, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen. You know, if you go there or if you go to college, you know, they come to sport, injuries, you know, a lot of type of things. So it all depends on their situation. But for example, a player like Jalen Suggs, you know, I would tell him, go ahead and make that move. If you're ready to make that jump, go ahead and try to go to the G League and, you know, try to make it out that way. You feel like you can play, you know. It's just college. You're able to showcase against college players. If you go to the G League, you're playing against, you know, minor league pros, some pros that's been in the NBA already, some pros not. So, you know, it's kind of just depending on your level and what you want to do and what's best for you and your family. That's probably the honest answer I give them. I wouldn't tell them what to do, but.
Yeah. Don't play down your high school career. A little McDonald's All-American joining us here, Gary Trent Jr. here on Tim and Friends. Being in the West, did you know much about the Raptors team you were joining? I mean, I guess you saw the chip run, but did you know much about the players on the team?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, outside looking in, you hear all the stories, you know, whether it's how Siakam, you know, blew up, you know, in year three, how Freddie, you know, he bets on himself, underdog, chip on his shoulder, you know, his story, you know, Kyle's story, OG's story. So, you know, a lot of guys' stories, you know, outside looking in. But, you know, being on the West, you know, it's completely different than the East. It's kind of run and gun. It's more chucking threes. You know, the East is kind of grinded out. You know, it's in the East, they're still throwing it into the post a little bit here and there. You don't really get too much of that in the West. But, you know, it's a great thing. But I know a little bit of the Raptors, you know, coming up.
It's funny, Gary, because Nick Nurse, you know, on the championship run, Box and One came out. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we're running basic high school stuff on defense. But Nick's known for running some complex defensive schemes. There's not a ton of practice time in a compressed schedule. How have you been able to integrate yourself into exactly what they're doing when you don't have a lot of time? You just got to hit the ground running.
Yeah, just try to, you know, play, rely on your instincts, you know, you rely to your training. You go through, you just listen, ask questions. You know, there's no such thing as a dumb question. Just continue to ask questions, learn as much as you can, and be a sponge, you know. Don't come in thinking you know it all, you know, just trying to, you know, gel, you know, be a good teammate.
You're in an RFA at the end of the year. Do you see the Raptors as a place that you feel like you can grow?
For sure. No, it's a great organization. The player development, you know, is solid, you know, really second to none. You know, what they stand for, what they've done, what they've proven, what they've brought through. You know, how would you not be a part of that? How would you not want to be a part of that?
I know it's not close to the same in Tampa, kind of limited and adopted fans. As a dude that sat in Jurassic Park during those championship runs, I can tell you it's a little bit different when you get up here. But I know that you're kind of on Twitter. Have you been able to kind of feel the love that you've been getting through social media, through Twitter and Instagram?
Sure. You know, there's all types of love. You know, whether it's when you first got here, you have a great game, bad game, you know, the love and the support is never gone, you know. And it's crazy, you know, the following, but you got to think, you know, it's my first time playing for, you know, a team in a different country. You know, for example, if you're playing for a team in that state or even that city, you know, they have their certain amount of fans or whoever supports them, but, you know, you have a whole country behind you. It's kind of different.
Gary, this was fun. We really appreciate you taking the time and doing this with us. And hopefully when you guys get back to Toronto and we're all in a better spot, you can come in the studio and talk to us.
Man, I'll enjoy that. Please.
All right. Be well, man.
Thanks, Gary.
There is Gary Trent Jr., the newest and among the favorite Toronto Raptors already. I mentioned earlier, listen, Steve Dangle was in here a week ago as one of the friends, and he started going through the trade trees that do really well on YouTube.
Yes.
And I started thinking about other sports.
Better than Layla introducing.
Yeah, better than Layla. Well, actually, I don't know. It'd probably be pretty close.
Yeah.
But I started thinking about other sports trade trees. And the Gary Trent Jr. Norm Powell trade tree is unbelievable. Can I just show you? It's not deep. It's not long. Can I just show you what it is?
Please.
The Toronto Raptors traded 23 games of Gravis Vasquez going into his unrestricted free agency and got the draft rights to Norm Powell, basically in a trade with the Milwaukee Bucks, and a first-round pick that turned out to be OG Anunoby. So they take the end of Norm Powell's contract and trade it for Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood. So they got 600-and-something games and a championship with Powell and OG Anunoby for 23 games of Gravis Vasquez, and whatever they get from Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood is icing on the cake.
You know what's amazing about the Milwaukee Bucks and their trade history? Like, when you were saying, is this one of the best trades in NBA history? The first thing I thought of, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar trade.
Yeah.
Walt Wesley and Kareem for Elmore Smith, Brian Winters, Dave Myers, and Junior Bridgman.
Didn't quite work out all that well. Still to come, we'll tee up the Leafs and Jets and Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Rashmi Daddy's sticking around, and the man that Gary Trent Jr. was traded for, Norm Powell, a Raptors fan favorite as well, will join us, and we will discuss his new home and his old home. We the Norm continues on Tim and Friends.
With the 46th pick in the 2015 NBA Draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select Norman Powell from UCLA.
Second round pick, he was sent from Milwaukee to Toronto in the Gravis Vasquez deal. Norman Powell, the rookie with the steal. We are tied! And it's stolen. Watch out, world! Straight out of Westwood.
He's an athlete. We can make some high-level, high-energy plays.
Oh my! Norman Powell over Anthony Davis! When do you ever see that?
I don't really care about the opponent. I just care about going out there, doing my job, and helping this team win.
Storming Norman to the rim! Norman Powell with the exclamation point! Playoff Powell! Puts it up, count it, and the foul.
Can I say what I really want to say?
Yes, please.
That was great. Thank you, Norm. That was unbelievable. That was cool.
Norman, playoff Powell.
We world champions.
You can do it. Put your heart into it. Now known in Portland, at least according to Yusef Nurkic, as Jon Snow. King of the North, and the North knows him as We the Norm, Playoff Powell, or just the Portland Trailblazers, Norman Powell, whatever you call him, he is on Tim and Friends. Welcome back, Norm. Thank you for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Does it feel weird? I mean, it feels weird to say it. Does it feel weird to hear the Portland Trailblazers, Norm Powell?
I think it's starting to settle in. At the start of it, you know, first getting here and being a part of the team, having the logo change, but still having the same colors as the Raptors was a little weird. But now starting to settle in, you know, being a part of the Trailblazers and, you know, being called Norman Powell of the Portland Trailblazers, it feels real now.
Norm, when you just watched that video montage, when you even listen to it, and you hear all those memories and all those moments, what comes flooding back to you?
It's a lot of fun, you know. My time in Toronto with the organization, being in the city, was just a lot of fun for me. A lot of good times, ups and downs throughout the journey. My 5.5 years there, some good memories, things that I forgot about, different plays that I've made, and being able to see them now, I was like, dang, I remember that. I remember those moments. And just having a lot of fun with those guys, you know, it's memories that I'll never forget.
You wrote a story for the Players Tribune that touched a lot of folks in Toronto. Did you realize how many people you touched with that? And why was writing something like that important to you?
Honestly, I didn't know how it was going to be received. I was kind of nervous about it. Just speaking about my whole journey and what the city and organization meant to me, I thought it was very important, you know, having the opportunity to say what was on my mind and my heart and how I felt the whole time. I feel like you get bits and pieces of that in different interviews and media takes throughout the years, but to really sit down and pour out how I truly felt from the moment I, you know, stepped foot in Toronto to the moment I left, to let the city and the country and organization know how much it meant to me, how much I dedicated myself to helping the team be a part of that championship run. I just thought it was a perfect send-off, you know, to explain everything in as detailed as possible of how much I enjoyed that journey.
It was very good. And I said after reading on the show, honestly, I felt like we don't look at the human element enough, especially on a day like a trade deadline day, whether it's us who cover it, whether it's the fans who are watching it and following on Twitter to see what Woj is saying or Shams is saying. And when you describe the emotion of seeing Kyle and seeing Fred and going through that, it touched home with me. Where do you think that emotion came from?
I just think it comes from the bonds that you built, you know, being around family. You know, I spent so much time with those guys going through the ups and downs, the battles of emotional games, close games, playoff series. You know, you get really close to them, opening up, allowing them to meet your family, you meeting their family. And just times, you go to battle with them, like I said, and you lay it on the line with them, you know, and to know that you're not going to be able to do that anymore for the time being, unless you meet down the road somewhere and you're going to be going up against them and sharing those moments, those locker room moments, those plane rides and trips, really emotional, you know. Fred was one of the guys that I really bonded with, when we first started off. You know, he's like a brother to me. Kyle was like a big brother to me. He was a great vet. Many guys, you know, throughout my time in a Raptors uniform, just had close connections with them. So it was definitely emotional knowing that, you know, I wasn't going to be around them day to day, and, you know, compete with them, to win a championship.
Norm, I think you got a real grasp, a real glimpse, a real feel for what Toronto basketball means, what basketball means across Canada in your 5.5 years here. Let's go back a little bit, because when you're growing up in California, in those days, there was a real inferiority complex among the fan base here of why doesn't anybody want to come here? Why doesn't anybody like us? Why is this not a free agent destination? Vince helped that a little bit, change kind of that perception, and then Bosch signed an extension here just like Vince did. It seems whenever somebody comes to this city, comes to this team, they love it. It seems like when visiting teams come here, they love the city too, but that's a different story. But it's still not a free agent destination spot. Why do you think that is, having spent so much time in the league?
I just think, you know, being spoiled in the U.S., and I'm speaking in a sense of my time in Tampa and here in Portland, I think logistically moving around is a lot easier. Being able to see family, not having to deal with customs and crossing the border and security, everything like that. I think the taxes play a big role in that. You know, a lot of players, you know, get taxed in the state, and we also get taxed in Canada working there. So I think a lot of things logistically play a part in it. Not just Toronto's not a bad city. Canada's an amazing country. I don't think nobody has issues with that. You know, people play in the cold in New York, Boston, Minnesota, Detroit, Cleveland. You know, the weather isn't as much of the issue, but I think it's more logistically and things for their family and money-wise and things like that that play a role in it. The organization is great. I think all the players that I've talked to love going to Toronto for those short trips and things like that. But I think having to deal with everything when you're dealing in a different country, playing in a different country, is what you have to balance out. And I think a lot of players don't want to do that.
Norm Powell joining us here on Tim and Friends. And Norm, we were just showing video of the fans, and I was in Jurassic Park for many games during those playoff runs. I was in the arena for many games during the championship run. I imagine it doesn't feel right that you didn't have a final game in front of those fans. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, that's something that I definitely thought about, you know, just being able to run out of that tunnel at Scotia Bank one last time with a Raptors jersey. are, you know, being able to play in that arena on the opposing side for the first time. You know, I was imagining and envisioning what that crowd was going to be like when my name is called to come out for the starting lineups and things like that, because I've experienced it on the other side when other players come back, like T-Ross, Bismack, and, you know, Vince, and all those guys, and how much love they get. So it's definitely something that, you know, I thought about, and I think I'm looking forward to next year. I've gotten so many messages still from fans talking about, we can't wait to give you the proper send-off in Scotiabank when I come back.
So Oregon's known for its wine, Norm. We know you like your red. how do the Oregon Pinots compare with the Niagara Rouge? And have you found a good plate of Mediterranean food in Portland? Because
I haven't found a good Mediterranean food yet. I'm still getting acclimated with the wine. CJ and Mello are the guys that I'm have to go to, because they're I think they're a level above me in knowing what wine pairs what with what. I have a couple bottles and things like that I haven't opened yet, but since it's an off day, I might indulge.
Listen, it was a tough loss last night, and tough conference, but it feels like this team, once you guys gel, can do some damage. When you got there, and listen, it's like Toronto where you've got real good guards that you can play with. You got Dame, you got CJ. Does it feel like you might be able to make a real run once you kind of gel?
I think we're primed for to be a threat in the playoffs for sure. I think we're still figuring out who we want to be. You know, with the with me coming in, figuring out, still, you know, getting my feet wet with the guys and, you know, feeling comfortable. You know, with Nurk coming back and him getting acclimated again, CJ coming back from his foot injury, I think we still have another level or two that we can take it up a notch, offensively and defensively. You know, I think in our last five or six games, you know, four of them have been decided by a point or less, you know, so it's just little things that we can tighten up on defensively, offensively, that'll take us, you know, to that next level, you know. And I think what I like so much about this group of guys is that they're hungry and they really want to win, you know, and they want a championship. And I think once we get all guys on the same page, focused on those little things that happen throughout the game, and tighten some of those up, we'll be able to make a deep run, because we have the skill, we have the ability, we have guys that can guard different positions and different ways we can attack. So I'm excited for what this team can do.
Norm, it seems like an underappreciated market and an underappreciated team with an underappreciated superstar over there. You're used to all that coming from Toronto.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
tell me the craziest thing about what makes Dame Lillard go.
The craziest thing? I don't know if it's really crazy. I just think for me, it's just seeing. I love seeing players who are at that level, but just so humble, you know, and hungry. He has that underdog mentality. He still has that chip on his shoulder for when he was first coming into the league. And I think that's what makes him so special, you know, despite all the accolades and the level that he's been playing at, you know, he's still himself, and he doesn't get lost in that. And he pulls everybody along with him, you know, and the way he talks about the game, the way he approaches the game. Doesn't matter if you're a guy who's playing 40 minutes or a guy who, you know, scratching and clawing his way to make a name for himself in the league. You know, he has the same approach with everybody. He's able to talk and mingle with everybody, making them feel appreciated and wanted and included in the team. I felt that when I first got here. So I don't know if it's super crazy or anything like that, but I just know that he's really hungry and he loves his game and he plays it with a pure heart.
All that, and he can spit. I know from the Players Tribune that Kyle told you, you will always be a part of this history. Kyle was right, and you were right when you said you are one of us. So I know I speak on behalf of many Raptor fans in the city and the country when I say we wish you nothing but the best. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Norman Powell
After the break, we hit the ice. Leafs and Jets separated by 4 points atop the North. We the Norm. We the North. They start a three-game series in Winnipeg tonight across the country on Sportsnet. Sean Reynolds, Elliot Friedman coming up next right here on Tim and Friends. In front of the show is Arash Badani. Thank you very much. Sheepdog's back here for hour number two on Tim and Friends with Arash riding shotgun the whole way today. Hey, remind me, Layla Anderson just popped up in the middle of our opening monologue today. Remind me after we talk to Elliot Friedman to tell you what's going on with Layla Anderson today. It's really creepy. In a good way.
Okay.
In a good way. In a good way. It's her birthday, man.
Okay. Well, you said creepy. I didn't know why.
Why do you have to go the complete...
I don't know.
She's a sweetheart story.
She is.
And I tell you that it's kind of creepy.
I was just telling you in the break how great it was when they gave her a Stanley Cup ring. And
well, it was... So, for those who weren't here, as I'm doing the monologue, her voice pops up out of nowhere.
Literally.
Because there was a YouTube clip playing while my computer slept. And it was just... What the hell happened here? So I checked to see if Layla Anderson was doing well. She had a bone marrow transplant, and she's doing wonderful. And it just happened to be her 13th birthday today.
Amazing.
Is that not crazy?
There she is. There's Layla.
I mean, maybe creepy was the wrong word for it, but it is kind of eerie to hear her voice pop
irony,
out of nowhere.
But look how good she looks.
Yeah, amazing.
Stanley Cup champion, Layla, who I think is playing hockey too, right?
Yeah, one of the stories that I pulled up just to make sure that she was doing good says that she's starting a new life after bone marrow transplant on the ice. How awesome is that?
Amazing.
So anyways, that's the story. It's not that creepy. It's actually wonderful.
Is she a bigger Blues fan today or a Golden Knights fan because of...
Oh, Pietrangelo. Yeah. All right, here's the deal. We're on Sportsnet till 6:30 Eastern. Hockey Central takes over ahead of the Leafs and Jets. We'll continue on until 7 Eastern on Sportsnet 360 and 590 The Fan. Got it good, and since you understood, we'll have a little NFL talk with Kyle Brandt of the NFL Network. This is going to be a fascinating draft, no matter how it breaks down.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks, but back to the Leafs and Jets. Blake Wheeler. Back in the lineup for Winnipeg after missing 6 games with a concussion. Nick Foligno makes his Leafs debut after his quarantine. He'll play with Marner and Matthews to start. Not a bad
welcome. Come on in, Nick.
Foligno met with the media today wearing his dad Mike's old hat.
It was a 93 edition here, so I'm rocking. I think it's got the starter logo in the back. So nice to be able to rock it and... You know, bring a little bit old with the new, and obviously, you know, a lot of great memories of that time, and nice to kind of bring it in here. And you know, like I said, what's the saying back then? The passion returns. I remember watching that video, so hopefully, we can bring a little bit of that into the mix here. That's what I'm looking to do. Just play a hard style of game that I normally play, chip in where I can, not expect too much of myself, and you know, all the while knowing that you know, I have full confidence in being able to help this team and I'm sure they're going to bring me along. There's a great locker room in there. Great group of guys, unbelievable players. I'm just coming in here, like I said, to compliment that, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
And playing on the first line. Let's bring in one of the members of our Wednesday night hockey crew on a Thursday night, Elliot Friedman, for his weekly 3 of 31, brought to you by the GMC Sierra AT4, the premium off-road pickup truck built for adventure. Friedge, not a bad way to join a team. Hey, welcome to Toronto. You get to play with Marner and Matthews.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, when I heard that Arash was going to be on tonight, I made sure to wear these, Arash.
Uh-oh. What are those? Ah, little Viking cufflinks. I like them.
Oh, I got to fix it. Yeah. Oh, there it is. They're
oh,
better.
Let me guess. It's facing. Upside down and sideways. Yeah. Kind of like the franchise.
Just like the organization, yes.
Just like the roof caving into the old Metrodome, Preach.
Close enough. But I just wanted you to know, Arash, I was wearing those for you, especially. Yeah. I have to say, Tim, I was a little bit surprised. I thought he might get Nylander and Tavares because I really thought that was kind of what the original plan was, to find somebody that could play with them. But I can't argue with the theory in the sense that Galchenyuk has played well with Nylander and Tavares when he's played this year with them, so it makes sense to me. And one thing about Sheldon Keefe is, and that's why I'm really curious to see tonight for a lot of reasons, but he likes to tinker, and he will try different things, but he will always keep a mental note of what worked. So in a lot of ways, it makes sense that in this situation, he'd try Foligno up there and go back with something that worked alongside Nylander and Tavares.
Elliot, what do you think the residue of those two losses to Vancouver is for this team?
You know, I've found is that, look, if you're a Maple Leaf fan and you're saying your Hail Marys or whatever you say tonight, there's a four-word prayer that's being added on the end of this, and that is, please, let's make a save. And actually, that's five
that's
words.
That's five words. Yeah.
Sorry. I added map. One word to yeah. it.
Good,
I added
feel
one
thinking.
Word to it. Oops, I was overthinking it. That's right.
Where's Sid?
How about please make a save? You know, those were tough losses. They were both winnable games. I thought it was really interesting that Sheldon Keefe came on before the second game in Vancouver and said, one of the things I want to figure out is why we can't hold a lead or why we couldn't hold the lead. And then they went out and they lost another lead in the second game, although that was clearly goaltending. You know, I think Toronto looks at it this way. In the last five games, their average is 21 scoring chances allowed. That's pretty good. As a matter of fact, that would put them 12th best in the league, according to the SportLogic numbers that we use. So I think their mantra that they're using to try to get through this is, look, we're not playing badly. We're just not getting the saves. And, you know, I think that's the way they're trying to position it. I think that's what they're trying to tell their players. I think that's the way they're trying to keep their confidence up. But, you know, this is a team they're going in against tonight that has not been a great matchup for them. It's a team that is smelling blood and smelling first place in the division. And, you know, I think if you're Toronto, you got to stop the bleeding. You can't be losing any more games.
We really don't know much about Frederik Andersen's injury. And just to complicate matters, the salary cap is going to play
yes.
a role. What's the latest, as you know it, on his timeline, if any?
So, in the aftermath of Tuesday's games, I was sending notes and trying to find out everything I could possibly find out about it. And, you know, again, you know, this is an organization. I think that, you know, I don't remember if it was you I talked with this about, Tim. And that is, I always look for patterns. And Toronto's regular pattern is pretty progressive when it comes to injuries. They generally aren't a team that tries to hide too much. They've obviously really hid this one, so it's unusual. But the best information I can give you is that the belief is he's getting better. Like, obviously, he's on the trip. He's skating. But he hasn't really practiced much. And you made a good point about the salary cap. It's going to be extremely difficult to get him into the roster. You know, Hyman is not out for the year. Bogosian, they said today, is minimum a week, but at this point in time, he's not out for the year. It's going to be hard to get him into the lineup absent injuries to somebody else. So I don't know how they're going to do this, but until they can be in a situation where they can get him to play games, I don't know how you could reasonably expect him to be your starting goaltender at the beginning of the playoffs, no matter what is happening around him.
So the playoffs.
Yes.
Whenever this North Division winner is crowned,
yes.
Where do they play the conference finals?
See, I think, the conference final is going to come down to the Canadian government, and I think they're expecting that they're going to be in the States for the conference final right now. I just don't see, look, like, Rash, I'm not sure how much you've been following the news lately, but we've banned more flights from countries today. I don't know what any of this means. I think they're going to have a contingency plan, and they're going to try to figure out, you know, if they can do it in Canada, but if not, they'll be somewhere in the U.S. And I don't know if it's going to be Buffalo because it's closest to Canada, or it's going to be Chicago or because it's more central, or where it's going to be. But they will have a contingency plan. I think the other question right now, Arash, is just how quickly these teams think they can get vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, I had someone tell me that some of the teams are beginning to think, okay, we might be in line to get vaccinated right around the beginning of the playoffs. You know, are you going to want to do that? You know, just because you never know what – I mean, I think you will because, you know, if you can, you will. But, you know, it's also a risk. You never know what reactions kind of people are going to have. It's really a tricky dodge. And one of the things we reported on the weekend was that – if they have to do a playoff bubble in the country, it's likely that it'll be in the States. Because that way it eliminates the problem and you can get everybody vaccinated because they'll all be of the proper ages down there. I think some teams have considered the possibility of doing
You're
it.
A popular guy, by the way.
Yeah, so yeah, been like, put your phone on silent. Right, come on.
I think some teams have considered the possibility of doing it, but they're all, you know, terrified of the blowback if they go early.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, Arash, it's not an easy situation. And I think it's been very hard for the players on the Canadian teams. Like, the U.S. teams are I think they've almost all of them, if not all, have had their first shots.
Yeah.
And many of them have had their seconds. It's been very difficult to watch the U.S. teams get vaccinated, especially with what went on in Vancouver the past couple of
years.
Yeah,
I mean, Golden State, like on the NBA side, Golden State did the Johnson & Johnson thing, so it's just the one shot. The Blue Jays, many of them did the same. They were banged up for a day or two afterwards, vaccine-related illnesses, but then they came back.
Only a couple.
Yeah. So it's interesting, Elliot, because the border. I was talking to some people on Parliament Hill before Blue Jays opening day.
Yeah.
And at that time, and this is pre-Canucks, they said the NHL at that time had a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt because the bubble went off well and that the North Division up, you know, they just had the one hiccup in Montreal.
And again, they weren't going back and forth either across the border. They're just staying here. Yeah.
But that the NHL had a little bit of leeway. Now I just wonder in the aftermath of what's happened with the Canucks. And don't forget, there was an issue with the curling in Calgary.
Yep.
If, you know, with the priority for the federal government and the borders they're across to bear on pro sports right now with the cases across the country... I just don't see it being a priority right now on the, you know, third week of April. Who knows what's going to happen a month or two from now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing is I had people saying to me there's no way that the NHL would get the quarantine from 14 down to 7 before the deadline, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
So they obviously have some pull or some good lobbyists or something like that. Like I think the thing right now, Arash, is that I do believe have been teams who've in Canada who've asked their players, look, are you going to get the vaccine? Are you comfortable with one particular kind as opposed to another? I believe all that those questions have been kind of done. I think that they've talked about it internally about do we just go ahead and do it and risk the backlash? But, you know, I think it's an easy thing to talk about. It's a very difficult, different thing to do.
Right.
I think what has clearly exacerbated it is just seeing the players on the U.S. team, the U.S. teams who've had one, if not two, already. And, you know, there was a controversy yesterday with Robin Lehner, and, you know, I think everybody's sympathetic to the mental health battles that Robin Lehner has fought before and continues to go through. And, you know, what he said did resonate with some players. I just think after the league saw what happened in Vancouver, they're just trying to be as careful as they possibly can. But I think that, you know, I do think that, you know, the players on the Canadian teams are looking what's happened south of the border with those, with their compatriots on those 24 clubs. And they're saying, you know what, like it's tough to watch what's happening there as opposed to what's happening here.
So that's, and we're running out of time here, but it's really interesting to me because he was talking about competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And if you've been following sports for this entire year, that phrase is really, really interesting. What was the NHL's reaction to what they heard from Robin Lehner?
You know, Tim, the league is steadfast in saying they haven't promised anyone anything.
Right.
You know, so, you know, somewhere here, Robin Leonard was told something that he now thinks was a lie. And the league maintains they never said anything like that. Hmm.
Frege, always appreciate you taking the time. We'll continue the conversation. Enjoy the game tonight, though.
Jets, well, it's a great game.
Yeah, Jets, Leafs, they always match up well. Great skill on the ice. Appreciate it, man.
All right, guys, have yourselves a great night. Good to chat with you, Arash. Tim, who did up your tie today?
Nice cufflinks, Friedman.
No, I'm not wearing a tie. Thank you, buddy. There is Elliot Friedman. And here's the deal, right? What you're talking about is the last cup to be won by a Canadian team, obviously, is 1993. You're finally going to get a team through the division and onto a conference semifinal, right?
What would they think in Buffalo if a Canadian team won a cup there?
Well, what about, like, even just if the NHL better be careful, because what might happen is someone say, we'll just play all the games in Chicago. And even if they have, I'm just picking Chicago as an example, it could be Tampa, whatever you want to call it. You can't play all those games, even if it's just 4,000 people in a stadium where there's a competitive advantage to being at home, even if it isn't a little final line change. Like, imagine the Habs get through, or the Leafs get through, or the Jets get through. Like, they've got to find a neutral arena to play.
Sure, and I think that's what Elliot was talking about. Yeah, that's why he was Buffalo or Chicago.
Yeah, he was. But that's just...
I just mean, if you're a Sabres fan and...
Yeah, I don't care about Sabres fans. I care about Canadian hockey fans that have waited this long. And not only will they not get to see their teams play, their teams lose the competitive advantage again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, world sucks right
now. I know.
Yeah.
I know. We have good... No, do we have time for this? Dobbs, no? Okay, I think we have good news.
Yeah, we do.
I think if you're a Jays fan...
Oh.
I think we have good injury news. All that seemed like a big bummer. Okay?
Yeah.
So listen to this news about the Jays and tell me if you think maybe there's some good news wrapped up in all this.
We got positivity corner over here.
We might have to do the good news of the day again. We used to do it on the radio when things were so bad.
Things are looking up. Okay, give it to me. Let me hear it. According to Arden Zwelling, he tweeted this out. George Springer will play center field in an intra-squad game on Friday, according to Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins.
That's good news.
Nate Pearson will also pitch two or three innings in that game. Springer's getting close to being activated from the injured list, which is awesome news for the Jays. Pearson's a little bit further off, though. Still needs to get stretched out.
But he's throwing,
which is good news. Strong chance Tyler Chatwood gets activated from the injury list on Friday and Jordan Romano on Saturday. Teoscar Hernandez has a clearance test Friday to return to Blue Jays facilities and ramp up his activities ahead of an impending return from COVID-19. That's also good news. And Ross Stripling is throwing off a mound today. Atkins expects Stripling could be back in the mix in days. Julian Merriweather will be shut down for a couple of weeks. I mean, that's
not good.
A bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
But let's take the positive. The Jays well on their way to becoming an international powerhouse, like we heard off the top from Jason Stark.
Springer, Romano, Teoscar sent, like, Monday?
Chatwood,
like, everyone's back by Monday?
So here's just the one thing I would say on Springer and Teoscar.
Yeah.
Let's just pump the brakes on expecting they're going to come in midseason form.
Right.
Like, George Springer has not taken a competitive, and I don't count spring training as competitive, has not taken a competitive at-bat since October of last year. So it's just going to take a little while.
Yeah, it might take a couple games.
Maybe, couple weeks.
Maybe a couple weeks.
Yeah.
To find that timing. Yeah, I agree with you.
And Teoscar the same, because he didn't have it before he got sick.
But given the way the other bats are swinging right now.
Or not.
You might take George Springer. At whatever percentage you're going to put him at. All right, time for a break. More pregame on the way. We'll visit with Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg, set up the Leafs and the Jets before getting you to Hockey Central, 6:30 Eastern. Stay with us. NFL and Hockey Talk, still to come on Tim and Friends. Tim and friends, welcome back. About 7 minutes away from Hockey Central on Sportsnet. Leafs and Jets, 7 Eastern across the country. The captain, Blake Wheeler, returns to the Jets after missing 6 games Jets coach Paul Maurice spoke earlier today and anticipates the intensity ramping up in the division as we get closer to the postseason.
Now you've got this kind of unusual tightening of the top three teams, and Montreal could eventually get, but realistically, the top three that are fighting for that first position, right? So that game's still there. So I think it ramps up hard here tonight, and it keeps going. What's been, and I agree with you, that game last night, you're going, oh my God, it's the end of May. These guys are going after it. But I, with Van being out, I've had more games, more evenings where I've been able to watch North Division, non-Canadian Division games. So I watched the Boston-Washington game the other day, and it was full on. And I'm watching that thinking, oh, yeah, I remember what the Central Division used to look like. So I felt our North Division looked more like the East. And I think you're going to find it start to move more to what the Central Division looks like as we get closer to the end of the season.
We had this conversation, Ken Reed, Mike Fiuta, and I. Like, it feels like all of these teams are so sick and tired of each other that they're ramping up to that level, and you wonder, can they continue it into the postseason?
Can I just change the subject real quick?
Yep.
I know there was the race for Drew Brees to join NBC, and like, who was going to get Peyton Manning in the booth?
Well,
and yeah. Like, I want to call my bosses and say, you know what? He's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He is outstanding. Yeah. He understands.
There'll be a bidding war.
He understands the whole shooting match. He understands narratives. He understands exactly what's needed. He paints the picture very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's Tony Romo.
The other thing is he's a really good coach.
Yeah. He's so, got a really good team.
So he might not be when he is ready to move to the broadcast booth is what you're saying, right?
I think it was Sean Fitzgerald did his 20 questions with Paul Maurice.
Yeah.
And Maurice said, look, I am 100 miles an hour, 24/7, all into this job. I know that I'm going to burn out soon from this job. Like, this is not going to go forever because it can't go forever because it's not sustainable to be forever.
He's a smart dude.
He gets a ring. Timmy, I give him a year or two after.
Don't scare Winnipeg fans like that. Right? You're just throwing the... All right. With more on tonight's game... Listen, Sean might have to deal with this. And the race is top to north. Let's send it to Sean Reynolds in Winnipeg. Sean, take it. You don't have to deal with this. Go ahead.
Tim, the Winnipeg Jets looking to play the Jason Voorhees role to the Toronto Maple Leafs and take their season-long hold on first place and turn it into a bit of a nightmare down the stretch. These next two games, a great opportunity to do just that, as the Jets have been stalking the Leafs for some time but just can't quite seem to get into that first place spot. Maybe more important, though, is the mental preparation for each of these teams as they ready for the possibility they could play each other in the playoffs going forward. The Jets feel they've been getting better at shutting down the Leafs' top guns as the season has worn on. A big part of that is Adam Lowry, so watch out for his line going up against Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and Nick Foligno, who we found out will be playing on that line this evening. The Jets think if Lowry can shut those guys down, the rest of their depth should run wild and provide them the advantage they need to beat this team. Another matchup to watch out for is in goal between Jack Campbell and Connor Hellebuyck, two very good friends. Campbell had the early advantage in this but stumbled the last time these two teams played and was pulled in that game. I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know, Tim, when I say the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have to figure out their goaltending situation down the stretch here if they want to hold on to that first place spot.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Does first place mean anything? Like, I keep going back and forth in this, like, so it's the last change in an empty arena? Like, I don't know that it means a hell of a lot if you finish first, second, third, or fourth.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about it that way. Yeah. Second and third means nothing.
Yeah.
Last change, yeah.
Yeah, last change and knowing the bounces in probably more games in your arena, but not guaranteed more games in your arena.
I guess it just depends who and how you match up against certain teams. That would maybe be it.
Right. Kyle Brandt is going to join us in a couple minutes. And I know we're sending folks off to watch the pregame of this game, and it's going to be good. But the NFL draft is 1 week away.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever seen a draft like this where, depending on who you listen to, like, what are we talking about? Top four being quarterbacks? Maybe, and like five in the top 10?
Top three for sure. Five in the top 10 could happen. And the best player on the board is Kyle Pitts. He's listed as a tight end from Florida. That's what he played there. He can go anywhere on the field. He may be the most versatile, dynamic, skilled position player coming out of a draft in forever.
You know what's funny is, like, I feel like he's Chase Claypool, and I'm not saying it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what is he, 233, 6'5", 233, or something along those lines? Like, I just feel like, oh, that was Claypool went in the second round. Now everyone's bigging up this guy. But listen, tight end, wherever you move that big body, we're seeing how valuable that is across the NFL right now.
Yeah, and this is not a copycat deal, although the way they'll use Kyle Pitts will look a lot like the way Pittsburgh used Chase Claypool last year. Pitts is special.
Yeah, I was thinking more Travis Kelce too, right? Like, you put Kelce all over the field.
Yeah, except they don't.
Yeah, they do a little
bit. Like Kittle.
Yeah.
But better.
All right, time to send you to Jeff Merrick and the Hockey Central panel on Sportsnet, followed by Leafs and Jets. Arash and I continue on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll dive further into this NFL draft with the NFL Network's Kyle Brandt. Back in 60 seconds. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. As we talked about before the break, the NFL draft begins 1 week from today. There is no shortage of intrigue. Will there be any more big trades? Will your future fantasy running back land in your spot? And of course, are the Niners really going to take Mac Jones at number three? It's always fun trying to predict what's going to happen. And what makes it even more fun is, despite all the cramming for the test, reading through the mock draft and that mock draft and this mock draft, it's important that we warn you, April is lying season in the NFL. Allow me to explain. It's looking like the 2021 NFL draft starts at the third pick. The Niners traded a boatload of picks to move up to three, and then all hell broke loose.
Justin Fields.
Mac Jones.
Trey Lance.
Justin Fields.
Mac Jones.
Trey Lance.
Justin Fields.
Trey Fields and Jones. Fields and
Trey
Jones.
Trey Lance.
Mac Jones.
Justin Fields.
Mac Jones.
Trey Lance.
Justin Fields. Mac Jones.
There's a lot of noise. April has turned into a smokescreen season for the NFL, where teams do their best James Bond impressions with a license to lie, running covert operations to steer their opponents away from what they'll do when they're on the clock.
Why you always lying?
Remember when the Bills wanted Ryan Nassib or Geno Smith to be their savior at quarterback, only to select E.J. Manuel, who they were eyeing all along?
We created it.
Or how the Bears sent every key member of their organization to Deshaun Watson's pro day while also holding a secret dinner with Mitchell Trubisky behind the scenes, then swore him to secrecy?
It's totally made up. Pure fiction.
What about while holding the first overall pick, the Cardinals insisting Josh Rosen was their guy, despite Cliff Kingsbury's history with consensus top pick Kyler Murray?
It's a made-up tale. It's a total fabrication.
For you fans trying to figure out what your team might be thinking, it can drive you crazy to decipher what's real and what's not. Usually, you can lean on the experts who are making hundreds of mock drafts to try and get a sense of what's to come, but even they get a little weird sometimes. I mean, come on. Every day it seems like we're hearing reports of the Niners selecting a new quarterback to lead them into the future. We can try and get a read off of some of these things and catch them in the lie, but ultimately the rule of thumb for you at home is simple. Don't believe anything you read. The good news is, in a matter of days, the noise will stop and we will have our answers.
With the third pick, the San Francisco 49ers select
Kyle Brandt. Oh, wait. He is not eligible for this draft. It was a few years ago, but he joins us now. Kyle, appreciate you taking the time to discuss this with us.
What a great piece. I love it. The needles are jumping
on the lie detector. The entire NFL has that Robert De Niro meet the parents cuff on nice. Them, just getting grilled, and it's just lies, lie, lie, lie. I love that piece.
Are you a pothead, Fokker?
Why'd you look at me when you said that?
Yeah, I just wonder if Ryan Pace wishes that he took Deshaun Watson out for dinner and went to Mitch Trubisky's pro day. Yeah. Maybe that's what Ryan Pace wishes.
Mitch Trubisky, currently a backup for the Buffalo Bills. But let's be honest, Deshaun Watson not sitting pretty either. So the draft has very many strange tentacles. Even that wasn't even that long ago, guys. That was just a few years ago. What the hell's that about?
Yeah. So San Francisco knows what they're doing, don't they?
Yes, definitely. I don't think anybody has more convictions than Kyle Shanahan. And yet, don't you think, you know, as much intrigue as there is with this draft and as much mystery, that's all in spite of like the chalkiest top pick that I can remember. Normally, that if there's intrigue at the top, that's interesting. There's nothing there. I honestly think before San Francisco, I think it starts with the Jets. Now, I know that everybody in the world and everybody mock draft 50.0 and this guy says Zach Wilson. I don't know if that's necessarily true. You know what's interesting about how we're talking now 1 week in front of the draft? We're in the eye of the storm where everyone from people in the media to people on the couch, they look at these mocks that we're throwing up and they just think that they're in stone tablets. That's how it's going to happen. There'll be no changes. I've watched these for weeks. And if you even suggest that something different, I'm just like, oh, you're crazy. They can't do that. Trust me, those mocks, there's how many picks out of 32 did they get right? Four? Yeah. Like it may be less sometimes. They're all kindling the second the draft starts. So to that end, I think the San Francisco pick is interesting at three. I actually think that it might get wild at two. Not one for sure, but maybe two.
Yeah, well, the Jets.
You know what I find wild?
The Jets. Yeah, the Jets.
But like, let's talk about Kyle Zima to Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
So Jimmy G's in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Well, he's not good enough anymore. Mm-hmm. And Jared Goff was in the Super Bowl 3 years ago, and he's not good enough anymore. And Seattle Russell Wilson wasn't happy with Seattle this offseason, but even all the draft picks in the world wasn't going to pry Russell Wilson out of there. And Arizona just drafted a quarterback, and then they go draft Kyler Murray. I don't know what to make of that division and quarterbacks and what the hell is going on over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because if they do, let's just say, let's go chalk, guys. Let's just give in to the mocks.
Okay.
Let's say they take Mac Jones. Is he not going to spend the next 10 years being the fourth best quarterback in the division? Like, is he going to be better than Stafford or Russell or Kyler? I mean, I don't see it from the talent perspective. Of course he could be, but if they take that guy, it's such a strange pick because you figure you move up to three. That's a bold move. Like you're going to go and do something crazy. You paid a huge price for it. And then you choose the guy who, this is one thing we can't agree on. It's probably, no, not probably. He's definitely the least athletic of the big quarterbacks. Like it seems, if we can indulge to use one of these draft time terms, the ceiling is low. It's like one of those mini houses. You have Fields and Lance and Lawrence. They're cathedral vaulted ceilings. Mac Jones is like, I don't want to call it an igloo because he's a really good player, but that's the guy that you want at three that badly? Do we even know for sure that he's going to be better than Jimmy Garoppolo? No. I mean, it's going to be cheaper, but that's the guy. It's really strange, but Shanahan is one of, like, the true mavericks in this thing because he's looked at as this genius. I don't know.
Because he likes Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins is garbage.
But that's why he wants Mac Jones. I think he
just wants a system
guys.
Quarterback?
Yes.
He does. Yes. Think of it this way.
Yes.
And the pocket Shanahan looks at relationships like a, no, I think because look at him. Matt Ryan, you know, just not spectacular. Kirk Cousins. I think Kyle Shanahan looks at these quarterbacks like a relationship. Like, I know there are other people who are more beautiful and smarter and richer. I got chemistry with you. I just need a good, solid husband or wife. That's all he wants to drive this thing. Unless, now we should get into this because this has been my one wish for all of draft season. If I could have a genie wish and make this happen, is that Kyle Shanahan does not make that choice and that he makes history and he takes Kyle Pitts at number three. That's the thing that I want to have.
We were just talking about Kyle Pitts.
Come on. Let's go.
Why not?
But hold on a second here, because this is what you're talking about and what you were just talking about with Kyle Shanahan rings true to me. And maybe I'm talking to a former running back, a star at Princeton, at Stevenson High. But I'm not going to say the quarterback position isn't important. It is. But every time we do these drafts, we look back and say, the greatest quarterback of all time was a sixth rounder. The second greatest quarterback of all time was a third rounder. The best quarterbacks in the game, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, look around. They all sat. They waited their turn. They weren't the number one overall pick. Are we overvaluing the top picks when maybe it's about the situation that you're put in just as much as it is about the talent?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's the quarterback thirst is real.
Yeah.
And yet they're just going to keep chasing it because they don't. And that's why I actually think that the Trey Lance thing is interesting this year, because this is nuts to draft this dude. I mean, say what you want about Wilson and his level of competition. No one has ever played as little a football, as low a competition as Trey Lance. Guys, he could go number three overall in the NFL draft. Now, we've seen guys from his level of football for years. Oh, you can go back to Phil Sims, Joe Flacco, Carson Wentz even. It's really rare to go that high. This, to me, is the ultimate wild card. And I'll tell you why. This is a product of Mahomes and Josh Allen. I think the strongest force in this draft, to talk about the quarterback infatuation, the strongest force is teams are willing to themselves, we're not going to be the guy who misses the next freak. We don't want to make the Trubisky pick, and then Mahomes comes in and cleans our clock. I feel like they'd rather go for some potential phenom than be like, well, let's take the safer thing or the more stock thing. I feel like the game is changing. These guys are swinging out of their shoes for crazy quarterbacks, and it's going to burn a few of them.
Yeah, no, there's no question it'll burn a few of them. But I think at this point, they're just looking for lotto tickets. Mm-hmm. They're just looking for somebody.
That's the draft.
Right, but look across football, and first-round quarterbacks who are no longer on rookie contracts still with their team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's Rodgers, now Mahomes, Roethlisberger.
Cousins, but new team.
No, but Cousins wasn't a first-round pick. And he's on a different team. Don't even get me started on
him. He's a Vikings fan. Yeah, he's got a thing with Kirk Cousins.
I sense that you guys have Kirk Cousins takes through the screen here.
Chris Carter told him to calm down on his Kirk Cousins take. True story. Chris Carter, Gold Jack, one of his heroes told him to calm down on the Kirk Cousins takes, and he's still going hard on this Kirk Cousins.
Because, Arash, there's a whole army of Kirk Cousins apologists online who will point out how good he is and how good his numbers are and how he's actually – not only is he not bad, he's actually really underrated, they will say. You disagree?
Yeah, it's the Kevin – I think it's Kevin Durant's burner accounts that are actually the ones who are driving that narrative, Kyle.
It could be.
But continue with the idea of the rookie contract.
Yeah, how many are left? And there aren't many, but you're just hoping that you find Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it took
Josh is going to get that deal, and Lamar is going to get that deal. Sure. It's coming. They're going to happen. But then somehow, Goff got it. They're like, we love you, and McVay is saying, we want to be stuck with Jared for a long time. Poof. Gone, yeah, Detroit. Yeah. It's really rare.
But look how many times Buffalo tried to cash in a lotto ticket. EJ Manuel, JP Lossman, Trent Edwards. They just kept, that ghost of Jim Kelly was down that door. And until they finally now seem like they found them. And that's what everybody's looking for.
I like that you call it lottery tickets, though, because I use that phrase often about draft picks. Here's my thing, my bottom line is I hate draft picks. They're looked at as these golden tickets, not lottery tickets, to the chocolate factory. Half of them are garbage. At least half don't work out. Yeah. And you sometimes, if you have a proven player, they're like, wow, you traded all these picks to get this player. I would always rather have the player. The picks... Oh, we got two first rounders. So how do you know those guys aren't going to be Mitch Trubisky and some other guy who doesn't work out? There's an overvaluation of picks, which again is why I come back to Kyle Pitts to San Francisco. I don't care what they spent. You can't overpay for an all-pro. You can't overpay for a Hall of Famer. I don't care if it's three first round picks, whatever it is. If you think that guy's if he's Travis Kelce, get him. Yeah. Get him, and you'll have the best offense in the league with Ian Kittle.
And the same thing with O-linemen, too. Like, I know that Kyle Pitts, but if you just get a really good O-line, a good tackle.
Yes, Walter Jones.
It's you never screw up the really good 10-time All-Pro tackle. Like, right. And it's never valued enough. This entire conversation goes back. Like, I'll say this about every league, every place, and this is the beauty of the NFL. They have hyped up their draft so much that every team thinks that their savior is in the draft, and all you have to do is go back and look at the drafts, and you see it's 50% in the first round that you get a good player.
At best.
Yeah.
That's what's exciting about, like, next Thursday night. There will be Hall of Fame players drafted. Hall of Famers. There'll probably be a couple. And that some teams are going to get a Hall of Famer next Thursday night. And a handful of teams are going to get terrible, terrible results. And it may be at 1. It may be at 32. But I think we're now in this love phase with the draft a week out. We're like, everybody's going to be good. Look at his shuttle. Look at his vertical. Look at his bench. We're all getting gold jackets. No, I bet 1 or 2 will get them. And I bet 9 at least are like, wow, what a terrible pick. Wish we could have that one back. Isn't that crazy?
And you know what's also amazing is that there may be as many gold jackets drafted on Friday or Saturday as Thursday night.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
Listen, this was fun. I would talk football with you anytime. And if you run into our good friend Nate Burleson, tell him we say what up.
You're friends with Nate? You actually like Nate Burleson? I thought everybody hated Nate. He's always so competitive and so non-supportive, and he doesn't dress well, and his hair always is unkempt. No, Nate's like the perfect human being. I would walk in traffic for him. And he claims Canada when it's convenient. Sometimes he says he's from the Seattle area. Sometimes he says Canada. I bet with you guys, he's like, oh, yeah, I got a Maple Leaf tattoo. Always does it.
we play up as Canadiana, too, so we're probably guilty in it. Listen,
that's okay.
This was fun. We appreciate borrowing you from the bromance that is Kenny Reed, okay?
Kenny Reed, you want to talk about walking in traffic? I would do anything for Kenny Reed. I love his clothes, his glasses, his Police Academy references. That's my guy. Right. Never mind Burleson. Burleson's dead to me. Kenny Reed, my true love. I love you, buddy. And you guys, too. Tim and Ross, thanks for having me.
I like that Burleson's dead to him. that's the second you say Kenny Reed, bam.
Don't get me started
that's
on
That's an NFL GM in the making.
Yeah, it is.
Dinner on Delta. You're cut.
All right. Be well, man.
Thanks, guys.
There is Kyle Brandt, not only star of stage and screen, but also a damn good running back at Princeton, 3-year starter at Princeton.
And what high school was it, you said?
Stevenson. Yeah, but Tamika Catchings went there, too, so he might be second to Tamika. All right, time for a break. When we come back, I was going to ask Arash if he'd stick around for last call, but I already know the answer, though.
Yes.
It's usually a yes. I've been there a couple times, and it's been fun. It's usually a yes. We'll do it. With Jesse Rubinoff next. On Tim and Friends! All right, I accused Arash Madani of being addicted to his phone in a commercial break, and then he just told me that Bill C-218 has passed the third reading in the House of Commons. This bill, C-218, is about single-game sports betting in Canada. And what happens after the third reading in the House of Commons?
Goes to the Senate, which you would think it'll now get rubber stamped. It doesn't appear as if there was going to be a spring election, which some people that you speak with in the were knowledgeable about these things in the gambling world and the government world were a little hesitant because they are saying, well, if this goes to an election, then the House dissolves. It may not get through the third reading. But now that it has, and now that it appears it'll be a fall election and not a spring election, this has a legitimate chance of going to Senate, getting the rubber stamp and happening, which is going to change the dynamic, the landscape, all of that with how we consume sports in this country.
Right here, and just not just bettors, but I think everywhere across, you're going to see people jumping into the market, trying to find their spot because it is something that everyone knows there's a ton of money in, but no one's been allowed to walk down the road because it's in this gray market or illegal in Canada. This is huge news for the sports industry in Canada and every team in Canada. Jesse
every
Rubin.
League.
Every league.
Yeah.
No, and listen, it's just going to keep happening across the United States, too. So it's not going to stop in Canada. Jesse Rubinoff, last call.
I love it.
Let's do some tennis.
You do Felix, love it. You're yeah. Yeah, you got a little sure. You got a little sprinkle
let's
in your
go.
Bag. I know what you're talking
Bill
about.
Bill C 218. Love to see it. To tennis.
217 and a half?
Yeah. Beat Denis Shapovalov in straight sets today. 6-2, 6-3 to advance to the quarterfinals at the Barcelona Open. Felix now leads the all-time head-to-head series 3-2. Is this already the best rivalry in the history of Canadian tennis, Arash?
Yes. Yes. And nothing even comes close. This is going to be McEnroe versus Connors, except these two guys actually like each yeah. other. Matter of fact, when Chapo had his breakout beating Nadal in Montreal summer 2017, that week, he stayed at Felix's family home's basement. Wow. So these two dudes actually like each other.
McEnroe, Connors, though, they were... We're going to get there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
At some point, Fed, Nadal, and Novak, they'll
move
be
on.
Gone. I promise. It's going to happen.
Okay.
One day.
Understood.
That's exciting. Can't come soon enough for Canadian
yes.
tennis fans.
Oh.
Zach Hampel, Major League Baseball's best-known ball collector, had quite an embarrassing moment during Monday night's Phillies Giants game. Hampel completely bailed chasing a home run ball, which he didn't end up getting.
Yeah, the guy came in and took it. It was amazing.
But last night, he was back at it, tweeting from the Braves-Yankees game, bad at jumping over seats, better at catching dingers. Austin Riley, top of the ninth inning, my 73rd lifetime game home run ball. Tim, cut or uncut this guy?
Okay. When I first heard about Zach Hampel, I just thought he was a loser. But stay with me on this. He now, for a living, goes to baseball games and catches balls and puts it on YouTube. That's his. He has made a career. At first, I thought he was just this guy who went to a game with a glove. Like, I mean, listen, if your friend brought a glove to a game that you were going to him with, you would call him a loser, would you not?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what I thought that he was. And then I started thinking about it. This guy makes a career traveling from ballpark to ballpark, catching home run balls, putting it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm the loser.
It sounds like the most 2021 job you could possibly have.
It is.
Yeah.
Catch home run balls, you throw it up on YouTube, and you become rich.
Surprised he wasn't on TikTok first.
I was pissed that he was stealing home run balls from kids, and now kids want to meet him more than they want to meet the players.
Right.
He signed a ball at Yankee Stadium yesterday. Gave it to a kid.
He's got it figured out.
Here's him stealing a ball from a kid. This is what I first thought he was. Well, hey, look, I got
first
my...
First you stole it from Aaron Judge.
I got my 63rd in your face,
but the kid.
The
kid has to know who he is. That's the problem. He's famous.
Well, now they do. At yeah. first, they were just like, get out of here.
This guy's just stealing this ball yeah. from me. Staying with baseball fan fails. Check out this guy at today's Diamondbacks Reds game trying to catch a homer off the bat of Eugenio Suarez. Yeah, I mean, that hurts. Losing his nachos in the process, and the kid grabs the ball from him.
Oh, yeah, lost the nachos, lost the ball. He lost everything.
Yeah, we talked about, I think it was last week, nachos.
Lost the shoe.
Nachos at the baseball game. Arash, what's your go-to stadium food?
Sorry, I'm just too busy watching this
That's
guy
amazing.
Fall on his face. And I love that the kid just grabs the ball and looks at the old man's like, hey, idiot.
Oh,
look
his
what
son's
I have.
Yelling at him. Look, his
right.
son's like, how did you miss that?
Oh.
Every man or woman for themselves out there.
That's
kid wants
so
to be the next
good.
Zach Hampel.
Kid wants to be the next Zach Hampel.
Yeah. Best stadium food.
It's been so long.
It's kale for you now. Like when you're dying about Slim Jim over here.
It's
salads.
Not kale. It's not kale. It's not salads at a ball game. I'll tell you that much.
Gorma Sabzi?
Gorma Sabzi. That's totally what it is.
All right. I got
you
one.
Like that one.
Investwood.
To the NBA. We got a great Eastern Conference matchup coming up on Sportsnet 360 as the first place Sixers visit the third place Bucks. Last night, the Sixers lost 116-113 to the Suns as Joel Embiid barely missed what might have been one of the greatest buzzer beaters in NBA history, if I do say so myself. Today, Embiid told Shams Charania of The Athletic that there is, quote, no doubt he's the MVP. Tim.
Just so likable, isn't he?
Do you agree
just
that Joel
so
Embiid
likeable.
Is no doubt
the NBA MVP.
If Embiid was a Raptor, you'd be like, yes, that's right, Joel.
Just for reference, Nikola Jokic is the overwhelming favorite at this point to win MVP.
I don't know that I would say that.
Steph. You know who's my MVP is Steph this season. Yeah. I thought it was Giannis, but Steph gets it for me.
Running up the board. The gambling board.
It is unbelievable. Rashmi Danny, thank you. Hold the show. It was fun.
C218.
Yes, Jesse Rubinoff also cheering C218. Goes through, kids. It's going to change. That does it for us. 76ers and Bucks coming up next on Sportsnet 360. Leafs and Jets, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Enjoy the games, everybody. See you tomorrow.